This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Howdy, everybody. Glenn the Geek here, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for April the 2nd, 2012, episode 371, sponsored by Kentucky Performance Products. Good morning, Horse World. Well, today we're bringing you sort of an encore episode. Jamie did a terrific show, one of her Women's Hope Series episodes with a terrific guest. Unfortunately, what happened was, when we put up the episode about 2 months ago, there was something wrong with the sound file, and we had to take it back down. We tried to put it back up again, and nothing worked. So we're guessing that most of you have not heard this episode. It's the Hope Series with Susan Cain. She's the executive producer of Unbridled TV. They had a terrific conversation. It was well worth listening to, and we thought we would try again today by putting it up when we're in our little vacation here on our move. We'll be back in a couple of days live, so look for that on our Facebook page at Horses in the Morning. In the meantime, I hope you thoroughly enjoy today's show. It's now episode 371, Susan Cain and the Hope Series. I hope you enjoy.
I am Jamie Jennings from Phoenix, Arizona, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for February 13th, 2012, episode 336, sponsored today by Omega Alpha. Good morning, Horse World. Well, today is going to be a special episode because, as you noticed at the beginning of the show, you did not hear Glenn's voice. That's right. I kicked him out. I said, you got to go. Because I have a very important person I would like to talk to. And what we like to do here every once in a while is what we call the Woman's Hope Series. And hope stands for something, but it doesn't really matter because these are segments that we like to bring to the women of the horse world to tell them about how amazing other women are and what you can kind of strive to become. And we just talk to women in the horse world who are doing amazing and inspiring things. So today we welcome Susan Cain. Susan was a guest a few weeks ago and we only had a few minutes with her, but after reading all about her, I wanted to have her on longer and kind of get more in depth with this fascinating woman. So we're going to go through her life, find out where horses are taking her now and taking her in the future. And you know the name because Susan is currently the host of the popular HRTV series Unbridled, which is currently in its 10th season. 10 seasons, Susan. Amazing.
It's incredible, Jamie, and thank you so much for having me on the show and giving me an opportunity to share the good news of horses and how they can really be a part of empowering women's lives in many ways.
Absolutely, and you know, I find that just talking to some women like you who do kind of above and beyond some amazing things. We had Madeline Pickens on for this show who is, have you talked to her before?
She is on my media list and hopefully since you've talked to her, maybe we can connect girl to girl because I would love to interview Madeline Pickens.
Oh my gosh, she had me in tears in this episode. So just an amazing woman. We had a female who was striking out on her own as a racehorse trainer, and we get to talk to you. So Susan, you know, give everybody a little brief bio of who you are, and then we'll get a little more in depth.
Sure, Jamie. I am a true and true horse lover. I was very fortunate to grow up on a farm. We had some horses, and my earliest memory was that of Canonero winning the Kentucky Derby in 1971, and I was truly just smitten with thoroughbreds in particular from that point on. But I loved horses. My happiest memories are with horses. I grew up with thoroughbreds that were bred for racing and for show horses, and spent every moment I could in the barn around them and literally doing everything with them, from galloping around bareback to doing a lot of pony club. I had some wonderful years of pony club experiences with my regional head of the Beverwyck Pony Club was Lynn Miller, and she was a very inspiring woman to me. To this day, I see a lot of the girls that I attended Pony Club with, and they're involved in the industry in one way, you know, or another. And from there, you know, I followed the course of many, many young horse girls and continued to show and got a little bit into teaching and then did some local teaching and helped girls and some young men get started riding and do some showing. And then, you know, that evolved into a little bit more with racehorses and galloping. Mm-hmm. And over the past 20, 30 years, I've really been involved in both aspects of showing, breeding, and racing. And that's, you know, since taken some turns with the evolution of Unbridled.
Yeah, and such an amazing show. I got to back up a little bit. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Troy, New York, in the town of Brunswick, a nice country farm, family farm for many years. And, you know, I went to a lot of pony club rallies and local shows and, you know, any type of local horse events. And that area was pretty rich, you know, with just horse people, horses in people's backyards. And, you know, I just loved horses, and I had the really got lucky when one of our very wealthy regional families brought Neil Shapiro in to teach their daughter. And when Neil came in, I mean, he's a renowned Olympic athlete and medal winner. He became available for lessons, and he really and truly taught me a lot of horsemanship and how to ride and, you know, do gymnastics and jump properly. And that was a big turning point. I was about 13 at the time that he came into the area, and he was a student of Bert Denemethy. You know, he was just the father of the U.S. equestrian team. So I attribute a lot of my early learning to Neil, and am always grateful to the Beltrone family who brought Neil to our area at the time.
So you were one of the lucky girls, and it sounds like everybody in your neighborhood was, but you were one of those lucky girls that had a pony growing up.
Oh, yes, and Snowflake. Her name was Snowflake.
Now, see, that's what's awesome, and I wanted to bring up, is that you sent me an email. You had read something about me. My first pony was named Snowflake.
Snowflake. She was the Snowflake. She was a bay pony, and she had a white star, and she was named Snowflake. And I still have the picture of the first day I got her. It was freezing cold, and I was absolutely scrunched up on top of her in this little western saddle outside in the snow, and that was me and Snowflake. I remember it like it was yesterday. And she did English western eventing. I tried to jump her over a coop, which was a little too high, and she fell over on me and broke my collarbone. So we went through that together. We went through many, many childhood highs, lows, and growing up together.
It really is amazing how much your pony can teach you growing up. But when you look back at your childhood pony, like your Snowflake or my Snowflake, it's amazing to think how much we tortured them, and we just came away with maybe some broken bones.
Oh, Jamie, I don't know how I survived it. When I look back, I mean, from literally just running and jumping fences, ditches, I mean, up over hills that you had no idea what was on the other side.
Yeah.
Repeatedly. And actually, when I had Snowflake at that point in time, a little bit of a sidebar story on the thoroughbreds, but my mom did a lot of endurance riding, and she was prepping for the 100-mile trail ride in Vermont. And she had a wonderful old thoroughbred mare she shared with one of her girlfriends. And like every other year, they'd have the mare, and every few years, somebody would have a baby from this mare. Her name was Betsy. And our veterinarian came and checked Betsy, and lo and behold, Betsy was not pregnant. So my mother started conditioning her for the 100-mile trail ride in Vermont. And I trekked all over the hills behind my mom. I was on Snowflake, and we had a wonderful time and just wonderful memories of that. And my mother did well in the ride and, you know, placed decently. I don't remember exactly where, but somewhere in probably the top third. And lo and behold, the horse was 5 months pregnant, the thoroughbred that she rode in the trail. So it really goes to show, you know, how sturdy and how much you can do with a thoroughbred as well. So that was just a super happy memory with my mother, and also it's just another testament to what one can do with a thoroughbred, even a pregnant one.
It is. Oh my gosh. You're like, I don't understand. She just, with a friend of mine, they had a horse and they were training it to run barrels, and they were getting more and more into it. And they are starving this horse. She just kept getting fatter and fatter and fatter. And I don't understand. They're barely feeding her anything. They're running her on barrels. Lo and behold, she's 5 months pregnant. They didn't know that a neighbor had visited. And it's just amazing what we can do. And oh gosh, aren't you glad they can't talk sometimes?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, I am.
Oh, they would be cussing us. So now you had these horses, you trained in the hunter world, and you came from, it sounds so much like the way that I was, because I remember I started getting excited about racehorses in 89 when Sunday Silence and Easy Goer had their rivalry. It was almost like affirmed in Aladar, you know, when you read the stories with the two of them battling it out constantly. And of course, Easy Goer, who looked like my horse at the time, so I cheered him on, ended up winning the Belmont Stakes, and Sunday Silence came in second, and it was this great drama. And that is what kind of excited me about racehorses. And you, however, then decided that you were crazy enough to go and be an exercise rider at Saratoga.
I did. And that is interesting, because that actually came out of, again, the hunter and jumper world. I had never sat on a racehorse or galloped a racehorse until, again, back to my mother, she had invested with Carl Nee, who was a great show jumping trainer for many years, when he started a pinhooking partnership. And we didn't even know what pinhooking was at the time, but he was buying some yearlings to resell as 2-year-olds in training. And we went down to his farm, and he put on a show with these horses and said, you know, Susan, you can ride here, have a leg up. And I'll never forget, I got to ride a beautiful colt by the Minstrel, big chestnut with a white face, and learned to, you know, put my stirrups up, and was fortunate to have some good riders next to me that just, you know, taught me how to bridge the reins and, you know, how to put my toe in a little and my knee and not too much leg, and learn how to ride in that particular style and be effective. And I'll tell you, it was a significant change from being effective in a traditional hunt seat, you know, that I was used to. And to this day, I'm so grateful that I learned both, because it's helped me be a better rider and helped a lot of horses make the transition from the racetrack to a riding horse, which is so critically important to help people be able to understand the differences in race riding and pleasure riding or show riding, and to be able to help their horses so it can be a fun experience. And it totally can be, you know, with some education. But it's a shocking difference going from, you know, a nice pick saddle to a little race saddle and standing up in the stirrups when you're going really, really fast.
Yes.
And when I used to get a little nervous or lose my nerve in the show ring, I would go gallop, because I felt like it just helped me become much braver.
Interesting. So that is what, I thought the opposite. I was fortunate enough, when you describe it, it's so similar to me. Because I, when I was 18, moved up to Lexington, Kentucky, and got a job galloping horses on the track. Had never ridden a thoroughbred racehorse, but was fortunate enough to kind of be around some people that taught me how to bridge my reins and shorten my stirrups and start to learn to ride these guys. But you went a little further, because as I'm reading here, at 17 years old, you bought your first racehorse. How were you able to do that? And I guess I don't have to really ask, but did you have the support of your parents?
I did. And, you know, most of my life I've been broke thanks to horses, but very, very happy. I still highly recommend it. But I did. I got involved, again, through just, it really evolved through, you know, the riding and then being involved with Carl and me and the pin hooking and then some racing partnerships. And I've always been a student of conformation. I mean, I found it absolutely fascinating why certain horses of certain shapes would run faster and better than other horses and have a more efficient stride. So it was just always, you know, been very personal to me to be a, you know, a bargain hunter and say, well, this horse, you know, could really be a great athlete. Maybe he doesn't have the pedigree, but he looks like, you know, he'll stay sound and healthy. So with that mentality, I went to an auction and bought a beautiful colt by Graustark. He was a gray colt, and I bought him for $5,000, and he went very cheaply at the time because he had a big scar on his hock, but it was totally a superficial scar. You know, there was nothing in the x-rays, and it didn't bother me at all. And he was a pretty gray, so I thought, well, if he's not going to race, he'll certainly be a lovely show horse. And I'm actually looking at a picture of him on my wall right now as we speak. And he went to a friend locally who broke him, and then I galloped him a bit and put him in a little partnership with some friends. And he went to Jose Martin, and Angel Cordero rode him, and won on him, and that was quite some time ago. And from that point on, I always had, you know, a few racing partnerships going each year where we'd just have two or three horses, you know, not too many. And, you know, for the most part, you know, we wind up breaking even. We haven't had anybody that's been a real superstar. I've bought some nice horses for clients over the years that have done very, very well. But our own group, we've always considered us to be successful if the horses came home safe. And, you know, if we broke even, that's fantastic. And most of them at this point are riding horses somewhere throughout the Northeast since they retired.
So you, with the horses, so just to move forward a little bit, you currently have a racing stable right now, and you kind of keep track of all your horses?
I do. Over the years, as I said, I've done a lot of breeding, and I have personally stopped breeding horses because as an owner and as a horse lover, I personally feel a responsibility for the horses that I've bred, you know, and at this point, that's probably about 20 or 25 horses over the years, and many of them are young right now. So I've put several into racing partnerships, and they will race hopefully at Belmont Aqueduct in Saratoga. They're homebreds, and they're big sound, you know, thoroughbreds with a lot of bone. I'd say, you know, good racing pedigrees, not a high-end commercial pedigree. And my goal with them being in New York was to be in a position to take advantage of all of the nice big purse money coming into New York with very little competition, quite frankly, right off the bat. So we've got horses that are currently in partnership, and they'll be with Will Phipps is one of our trainers who has a bit of a jumping background as well. Linda Rice we've had good luck with, and she is a really cool lady. If you can ever get her on the phone to interview, she's a great inspiration to women and just super successful in what she does. And that's, you know, but I'd say I have seven horses now that are in partnerships, and I do track and do follow and rehome horses as need be. We just placed a few brood mares, and one of the things that I do that, you know, I'd like to share with your audience, in addition to, you know, what's available through the Jockey Club and Thoroughbred Connect and different ways to track our thoroughbreds as they mature, is, I mean, I write right on the Jockey Club papers, you know, if this horse is found in need of help, rescue, in a kill pen, somebody can't afford it, call me, email, and I will help, you know, so at least that's another identifying factor that goes with our horses to help them out. And I have had, I mean, over the years, I have had some people call me and been fortunate enough to, you know, have a network where I could help out the people and the horses, because not, you know, not everybody wants to fall into a bad situation, but sometimes it happens. And I think the solution to our problem with horses is to, you know, slow down on the breeding and communicate, network, follow through. You know, in the digital age that we live in, there can certainly be, there can be homes for every horse. And I just saw that across one of the headlines, that there's a new program focused on that, a home for every horse.
Yeah. Well, and I think what you're doing is incredibly important. Obviously, you know, I'm an advocate of slowing down the breeding. Let's start to get a little more responsible for these horses. But writing that down on the papers, I've actually heard that that is becoming more popular to do. And, you know, it's sad to say that every story that I've heard about that somebody writes down on their papers, this horse can come back and we'll have a home, I will help you, have all been women. What is it with that? That's all of us would have 1,000 horses in our pasture if we could, wouldn't we?
Isn't that, yes, I can attest to that. Well, and it's interesting you say that about being women. It was actually, I picked that up from somewhere I had read Nick Vito's wife did that or put a sticker on the papers. And that's where I first saw it about 5 or 6 years ago. And I thought, that, you know, that's so simple and so brilliant. You know, at least there's part of the solution is right there, to be able to help. But, you know, on Thorough Talent, which we talked about on the air a few weeks ago, that has received over 300 responses. I think it's 308 stories. And I'd have to say probably 307 are women. I am absolutely serious. I mean, amazing stories of how horses have changed people's lives and people have changed horses' lives. Absolutely incredible. I mean, emotionally, physically, mentally, massive changes that have made life better, you know, for those horses and for those women.
And what's really amazing, too, is that when you think of the racing industry, whether we like it or not, and I know things are definitely changing, but it is a very male-dominated industry.
It really is. And, you know, that's why I mentioned Linda Rice about possibly interviewing her, because, I mean, she started on the tracks in Philadelphia, and boy, she bootstrapped and worked her way up. And it is a very male-dominated industry. And men don't cut women any slack on the racetrack, whether they're jockeys, you know, or trainers. Mm-hmm. There's definitely... sorry, I have my kitty cat. My male cat is attacking me. as we're talking. There we go. So that is a challenge. And, you know, I think women that I've interviewed for Unbridled that are, you know, day to day on the racetrack, that's a real challenge that they face. You know, and it's not easy to deal with.
Yeah, I remember being 18 and walking into the track kitchen. I did that once. Okay, I was like, you could hear the record on the, you know, the needle on the record player scratch off to the halt. You know, it's like, who is that girl and what is she doing in here? So, you know, and I know that it's definitely changed even since then. I mean, heck, that was, oh Lord, I don't even want to think how long ago that was, and I won't tell. So I know things continue to change. I just think that's fascinating that the men, male dominated in the racing industry, and then you get 307 submissions from women going, I have a racehorse. He does this now. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it goes to show you too, just how amazingly versatile the thoroughbred breed is. And we'll definitely get more into that. I got to tell you guys who our sponsor for today is, and it's Omega Alpha. And at Omega Alpha, they care about what we feed our horses. Probably, you know, they care. We care about what we feed ourselves, but we care more about what we feed our horses, let's be honest. And Omega Alpha also cares about what goes into your horses and ponies. And that is why Omega Alpha uses only natural formulations for enhancing equine health and performance. All of their products are made by them using the finest natural ingredients available. The other difference with Omega Alpha is the science that goes into their products. Dr. Chang is well respected in the industry as a pioneer in putting the right natural ingredients together to make formulations that work for your horse. They have a wide range of products to help your horse, even your dog. So you can see them all at omegaalpha.ca. That is omegaalpha.ca. And we are with Susan Kane. And Susan, I was reading your bio, and it says here, if I can quote it, and then I've got to ask, it says, Queen Elizabeth II recognized Kane's excellence in horsemanship with an invitation to meet the royal enclosure at Royal Ascot, often regarded as the world's most prestigious race meet. What the heck? How did you meet the Queen?
I literally, Jamie, bumped into her. This is such a funny story. Royal Ascot, if anybody has an opportunity to go, it is well worth all of the pomp and ceremony and things you have to go through to get there. The Queen's Enclosure is an area that you have to pass through a lot of security, and you have to write and request permission for consideration, and then get all sorts of letters and preferences from any big names that you know in the United States, and it's quite, the protocol is quite a process to actually get invited into the royal enclosure. And then once you're there, you know, you have to wear, men all wear top hat and tails, and women are dressed in lovely suits and dresses, and you have to wear white gloves and a hat as a requirement. And the reason for that is, in case you have the privilege of meeting the Queen, you must curtsy, and, you know, your skin cannot touch the Queen's skin. So that's the reason for the gloves. But lo and behold, the good thing is the Queen really, really is a horse lover. So she's a pretty cool lady. And when I was in the royal enclosure, we were in the paddock area, and I actually kind of tripped backwards on my high heel on the turf and bumped right into the Queen. And I turned around, and there she was. And I said, oh my gosh, you're the Queen. And she was so gracious with the loveliest smile. And I quick curtsied and took her hand and just chatted for a moment. And what an amazing woman she is to be involved, you know, in horses. And you can tell she's very comfortable around horses, that she really is a horse lady. And that was refreshing in the midst of all the formality that goes on at Royal Ascot. But it's a great race meet to attend, and it's just beautiful. I mean, everyone is dressed beautifully, and the horses are just, you know, it's July, it's the height of the season, and their coats are glistening, and it's gorgeous. I mean, you've got bright green turf and wonderful, wonderful, exciting racing, you know, to watch. It's so strategic, given the difference in the courses in Europe. You know, you've got an undulation to the courses, and for the most part, longer races. So it's a bit different than U.S. racing.
Okay, so listening to that story, you're just way cooler than me. So I am standing on the red carpet at the Screen Actors Guild Awards, okay? And I tripped and fell into George Clooney, okay? So you're... No.
All right, so snowflake, and we trip and fall in high heels.
Yeah, exactly.
Into famous people.
Into people that are like, well, at least the Queen was gracious. George Clooney was not so thrilled about the whole thing. I swear I was pushed. Until this day, I will go to my grave saying I was pushed. But I fell in my high heels into him. And he was not so sweet and gracious. I mean, he wasn't rude, but, you know, it was like one of those moments where, like, oh my God, I'm the biggest idiot in the entire world. And
oh my goodness. Well, the next time you bump into him, you can tell him he's got another TV personality that thinks his horse is just like George Clooney, and that's Carson Kressley. I interviewed Carson and asked him who his horse reminded him of, and he said George Clooney.
Oh, you're kidding.
I am not kidding. It's on camera. It's caught on camera.
So tell everybody who Carson Kressley is and then explain why he has horses. I didn't know that.
Oh, my goodness. Carson would be a fabulous interview for Horses in the Morning. He was just on Dancing with the Stars.
Yeah.
And he was one of the stars of Queer Eye for the Straight Guy, and Bravo was really a breakout role for him. But Carson has been involved with Saddlebreds most of his life.
And he
trains in Pennsylvania with a fellow named Skip. And, gosh, he's had Saddlebreds, I'd say, the past 15 years that I know of, and I believe previous to that. And his sister rides, and his niece rides. And he's a beautiful rider. He's at most of the big Saddlebred shows and just absolutely loves his horses to bits. And, I mean, long before he was a star on TV, he was a big-time horse lover.
Okay, so we're into the celebrity talk now, because if you would have told me to pick a celebrity that I would have thought would least likely be having horses, it would probably be Queer Eye for the Straight Guy's Carson Kressley. That's awesome. Now, I also saw that you have done interviews also. Why Madonna? What's her horse connection?
Oh, my goodness. She just loves horses, loves to ride English and Western through the countryside. You know, so really, you know, my whole reason for Unbridled's existence is to make a better life for horses. And quite frankly, if I can get any big name celebrities to talk about horses, I feel like it'll get more tune in from people. Maybe they tune in for the celebrities, but in fact, they'll get some really good tidbits about horses, and it might pique their interest in horses. So I really try to find any big names I can for that reason. And what's really exciting, I mean, about people like Madonna or Christy Brinkley, even Melissa Rivers, Martha Stewart, if I called up and just said, oh, you know, I want to interview you about your life, it's like, yeah, get on the waiting list. But when you call up somebody to talk to them about their horses, it is amazing how much they actually open up and talk. And it just to me speaks so wonderfully for what horses can do for people and how they affect people. And again, how they open doors for people. And that's, you know, that's really why I'm a celebrity chaser for Unbridled, for that reason, in the hope that, you know, look at these famous people enjoy horses, and you too can enjoy horses the same way, you know, that they do. And that's the beauty of a Madonna interview, or, you know, Christy Brinkley did a lot with Western horses. Clint Eastwood, I have an affidavit before Clint Eastwood to allow him to name one of my horses after him. So we're working on that quite aggressively. Hopefully it will come to fruition.
Wow.
my husband and I were watching Unforgiven when this cult was born. So we thought, well, we'll name him Clint Eastwood.
So you have to actually get permission from Clint Eastwood to name a horse Clint Eastwood?
I submitted the name to the Jockey Club, and the Jockey Club, you know, they approved the name pending an affidavit from Clint Eastwood that I could use his name because he is a famous public figure. So that was interesting. I hadn't experienced that before.
Yeah, no kidding. You should have just told the Jockey Club, I'm not naming him after that Clint Eastwood. This is a whole different
Different Clint Eastwood.
That's cool. Now, I'll give you some names then, because in my career with country music, there is nobody that likes to talk more about horses than Jewel and her man, Ty Murray.
Well, it's interesting you bring that up, too, because I had dinner with a girlfriend the other night from the city who's well-connected with the Country Music Channel, and I said to her, you know, I really would like to do a series going and visiting the country stars and their horses. I think it would be absolutely huge and so well-received. So that's a great bit of advice.
That is Shania Twain. Oh, my God. She is a total horse lover. So you'll have to talk to her about her Andalusians and Lusitanos. She's an awesome, awesome woman, too. So with all these celebrities you've met, talking about horses, obviously, is one you know, one aspect of it and probably gets them to open up and be a little kinder. Do you have a favorite celebrity that you've spent time with?
Oh, gosh, that's a great question. Boy, a favorite. Well, you know, I do have a favorite, but he's passed away. And that was Merv Griffin. I actually interviewed Merv at his farm in La Quinta, and he absolutely loved thoroughbreds and show horses and supported any of the local shows any way that he could. And I have to say he was the most gracious man I've ever interviewed. It was early on in my interviews, and he carried the interview and was just so phenomenal. I thought, wow, you know, talk about, I mean, he's one of the biggest names in the entertainment industry. Mm-hmm. And to have the privilege to speak with him and you know, he helped me learn how to do an interview. And I was supposed to be doing the interview. So he always has a dear place in my heart after that.
Wow, that's not bad. Now, do you have somebody maybe that is your least favorite that you were like really disappointed about? You can name names on here. Nobody's listening.
I've had some big name owners that just kind of didn't have time for anything, but not really any celebrities. No, you know, they've all spared a moment, you know, even if they were in a hurry, and that's been really cool.
Well, yeah, I guess, like you said, talking about horses, people open up definitely a little more. And I know that William Shatner has horses as well. And you've mm-hmm. talked to him too, right?
Yes, he is an amazing character. In fact, I'm trying to get another interview lined up with him shortly because he's in New York doing some Broadway work for the next few weeks. And I'm just 90 minutes from the city. So it would be good to get the cameras rolling while he's close by.
Oh,
but he's a huge saddlebred lover, and you know, he's such a showman, and he really just puts it all together when he's with the horses, and quite a ladies' man. He's very charming. very charming.
So that means William Shatner hit on you? Is that what I'm getting?
Oh, I think I was one of many.
Speaking of that, I guess you are a happily married woman and you have kids?
Yes, I'm happily married. My husband is a farrier. He was a former president of the American Farriers Association. And
God, you're brilliant. Brilliant. Marry a farrier. That's as good as marrying a vet.
Right. Did it a farrier, a vet, or a lawyer? So needless to say, I have horses that have wonderful feet on them, big and strong and sound. And, you know, I've always believed the farrier is the most important component of a performance horse stable because, I mean, hoof care is just so critically important. And that's, you know, even long before I married my husband, the farrier, that has been a fact that we have experienced in, you know, racing stables and show stables as well. And between us, we have three children. He is a son and a daughter, and I have a daughter that I've actually been doing a lot of editing of her just before we spoke on some footage that we did in Ireland. So that will be coming to HRTV shortly as well.
Okay, so let me see if I can put all this together. You have a television show. You have mm-hmm. which most people that takes up their entire life. You've got a thoroughbred racing and breeding program, which for most people takes up their entire life. Then you've got a family of three children and a husband, which for most people takes up their entire life. How do you have the time?
It is. It feels like 24/7. It really does. I mean, at this juncture, I'm starting to wind down. As I said, the breeding and the racing, we're really just shrinking those numbers so that, you know, I can be responsible and prepared and hopefully make my millions in media so that when all of these racehorses come back that I signed the papers on when they need a home, I'll be in a good position to take care of them and feed them. And as far as our family goes, goodness, most of the kids are growing up and out, so we're very happy empty nesters. And that that takes care of them a bit, and they're not involved in horses. I mean, my daughter does a bit of writing for Unbridled and helps me with that, but nobody's active on the farm. It's just my husband and myself are involved in that. So,
wow.
So we try to just, you know, compartmentalize and make delineations and enjoy each thing that we do. But it's hard. I mean, it's a lot of juggling. It's a lot of juggling of time, money, resources, you know, just trying to keep everything moving ahead with TV and with the racehorses, because both are very demanding on our time. You know, there's so many deadlines and so much paperwork and tedious work and the editing to make sure it's just right, that it's a big challenge. I mean, and we are in the thick of it right now.
Oh my gosh, absolutely you are. So before we go on, I got to let everybody know that Pocket Stable is also a generous sponsor of today's show. How do you keep track of your horses? Now, Susan, this would actually probably help you. Pocket Stable is an iPhone app that you can download that you can keep track of your horse's farrier visits, dental visits, vaccines, deworming, all of that in your iPhone. If you've got a box full of receipts, post-it notes, or you can't remember the last time your horse got, you know, his West Nile shot, well, this keeps all of that information in one place in your iPhone. You can visit them at pocketstable.com. You can also find Pocket Stable in your app store on your iPhone. So go ahead, check them out. It's only $3.99 for all that information. pocketstable.com. So, Susan, now... Do you have something else you want me to hold?
No, you're good. You're good. Go ahead.
Is the cat getting you again? You know, it was so funny when we interviewed Madeline Pickens. This just sounds perfect because Madeline's dog started barking like crazy. Her dog's barking. Then my dog started barking because I've got two dogs and a cat in the room with me right now.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, animals, you know, they love to interrupt and they like to get a word in, I guess. So,
they do.
But so, in your house right now, we got to talk a little bit about what four-legged friends you have kind of in the house. Do you have dogs, cats? What else do you have?
Actually, I just have cats right now. I have four cats and a few outdoor cats that are pretty much hang out around the barn. But inside, four kitty cats. And if anyone goes to my Susan Cain Facebook page, they can see the cats from, you know, day one right through today. The cat pictures have taken over, and they, keep me company. I'm a huge advocate to spay and neuter everything, and my little cat managed to get out before she got spayed, and long story short, she has four kittens from that escapade. But I'm happy to say everything on the farm now is fixed. So now, we don't even anticipate any more of that.
I am a big spay neuter advocate as well, and as long as everything is fixed but your husband, we're all good to go. You know, they kind of get mad about that.
Me too. That's well said.
So what is in store? You've got the TV show, you're in your 10th season. What are we going to see coming up on this season?
Oh, gosh, I really hope to move into a lot more educational pieces and how to really, really, you know, help people with economic tips, with practical tips, and try to show people how they can get involved with horses at every possible level. You know, the celebrity interviews are really just leaders and lead into the shows to get people to tune in. But I think one of the biggest challenges that our industry has is the perception that it's very hard to become involved. And from my perspective, I see so many levels that people can be involved, whether it's, you know, kids after school even coming to groom horses or volunteer or do work in a local stable or actually get involved in a lesson program. Over my years in teaching riding, I had so many women come to the stable that were probably, I'd say 50 to 60, that finally had the time and the money converge that they could manifest that lifelong dream of being involved with horses and either own a horse, lease a horse, take lessons on a regular basis. So I really want to exemplify that, you know, horses are accessible and that horses are affordable. And I really hope also, you know, through segments that we do to help start to build some level of integrity among people that are in the industry when they bring new people into horses. That's been a, you know, it's a touchy subject. I've been in this industry my whole life. I know the good, the bad, the ugly, the wonderfulness of it. And I think together, you know, we can all make a positive change. And it's very frustrating to me to see, you know, either new people come in, quite frankly, that have a lot of money, they invest and they get burned and they get out of the business. And that's, you know, we have a high turnover rate on that end, coupled with, you know, you have people that their heart is in the right place and maybe they don't have the pocketbook to do it, yet there are many avenues that they can be involved, again, from volunteering, you know, at a local shelter to a rescue to a rehab center, to even participating on the administrative side, you know, with a stable or something to do with horses. So I really want to share the message that horses are affordable, accessible, and you can be involved. And also, I mean, one of my mantras with the racing partnerships is that an educated partner is the best partner. That, you know, learn all that you can learn and don't stop learning, you know, about horses, about the people that you're looking to get involved with, to, you know, seek out references, ask other people that are in the stable, you know, just really communicate and network for the greater good of being able to all enjoy horses in a better way. I'm very frustrated to see horses being so commoditized and that, you know, well, they're not worth anything, you know, for example, after their racing career is done. So, you know, we're done with them. We don't want to pay a bill. And, you know, those horses can be a lifesaver to someone who's dreamed of a horse or to a therapeutic riding center or even, you know, trail riding, lessons showing. So to really try and, I want to use Unbridled to help, to be an expression to help people change the way they think about horses, you know, and hopefully help the horse industry realize, you know, what a special, wonderful life we live and how privileged we are to be involved with horses and to not take that for granted. And I mean, that's a big nut to crack, but I'm going to be out there trying to do it. I mean, really feel more than ever that's the reason for Unbridled's existence.
Well, and I agree. And I think, you know, as I said to you before, education breeds interest. And you know, I have a neighbor that is German, grew up in Germany, now lives over here. And she said she had to put her name on a waiting list to ride in her town in Germany. And she was on the waiting list for 10 years. So we are so lucky. We've got these in our backyard. Wow. You know, you can find them anywhere. And we're so lucky to be able to take care of them and for them to take care of us. And, you know, you mentioned continuing to learn. Are you still learning now?
Oh, I never stop, Jamie. You know, every single day I learn things about horses and lessons from horses that, It just blows me away. I mean, every year that we saddle horses that haven't been ridden before, and they actually allow us on their backs, and the things that we can do with them. Just yesterday, we've had unusually mild weather in the Northeast, and I was out yesterday with my husband and a gal that rides with us. I was riding a 2-year-old filly by Big Brown, who's world famous, as we know, and she's out of a mare that has produced 5 stakes winners. So on paper, she's probably, you know, a $1 million filly. And I was out with her and two other young racehorses, and we rode for 2 hours all through the Claremont State Park. That was her racehorse training through the day, up and down hills, through bridle paths. And here's a filly, I mean, the first time she was ever out there, ever did that. And, you know, the fact that they look to us for some support and encouragement, and then, you know, we give that to them, and we trust them, you know, that they're going to do the right thing. And it just, it astounds me. I think it's what keeps horse people young, is that you never stop learning about horses or different ways or better ways, you know, to do things with them from their point of view. And that's the most rewarding thing that I have experienced being involved with them through my whole life, is that more and more I feel that I can see and feel things from their point of view. And then it affects how, you know, how I work with them and how I handle them. And much to my amazement, they're such willing partners, you know, at all times. It's like they, sometimes I think they just look at us and they're like, you know, come on, what's up with you? I'm here, ready, willing, and able to do what you ask. And, you know, and that's part of the message that I'd like to share in Unbridled with so many situations where people have problems with horses, is to, you know, take a step back and look at it from the horse's point of view. And one of the things that changed my life, I rode for several years with Anthony D'Ambrosio Jr., who's now a very famous course designer and who also held the high jump puissance record on a horse called Sweet and Low, who was a thoroughbred off the track in Pennsylvania. There's actually a YouTube video of Sweet and Low jumping at Washington International, about a 7.5-foot wall, and just a magnificent display of horsemanship by Anthony. I mean, he is an incredible, incredible horseman. But back to, you know, my point about the way the horse thinks and the way that we think about horses. I recall specifically coming out of a class at HITS in Saugerties, and I was on and off the track thoroughbred, and I was frustrated and I was mad. I went in and the horse tucked down the first rail, right, of the, you know, and then you have 15 jumps to go. And he jumped around clean, you know, the rest of the way. And I remember coming out, and I was really mad. And Anthony just looked at me, and he said, "Susan, why don't you ask yourself why the horse jumped the other 14 jumps clean?" And to this day, Jamie, that literally changed one of the ways I thought about horses and asked questions in a very positive way. Yeah. You know, so when you get mad at something like that, well, then, you know, well, I'm mad the horse wouldn't load on the trailer. Well, why did he load on all of the other times? You know, and I just see it's part of just being human and being frustrated and trying to work through everything. But a lot of times our tempers, you know, get in the way with the horses. And it's just little things. I think, you know, if you have stuff like what Anthony did for me, you know, you can draw on that, and it just helps change everything for the better.
Yeah. Oh, without a doubt. What a great way to think of things. Like, really? He didn't do that? Well, he did it 14 other times for you.
Exactly.
I love it. Well, exactly. You know, we're running out of time. As usual, I could probably sit and talk to you for a weekend over a couple bottles of wine, but tell everybody where they can find you. I know facebook.com/ Susan Kane, and then your website is unbridledtv.com.
It is. And we're actually, I mean, we've been developing and redoing the website. So it's got, you know, some videos and articles and our schedule coming up on it. But Facebook/, you know, Susan Kane. I'm also on Facebook as Thorough Talent, which is T-H-O-R-O Talent. And that's for our Thoroughbred Stories, which, as I said, we've got 308 of, which are fabulous. And also at unbridledracing.com, and that covers the racing partnerships that we do as well. So pretty much anytime you Google Susan Kane or Unbridled, you can find me.
You're very Googleable. You're Google friendly.
Yes, very Googleable.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show. Yeah, I just love your outlook on life. I love what you're doing. I love what you stand for. And, you know, let's find every thoroughbred a good home if we can, and every horse for that matter. So cheers to you, Susan, for doing what you're doing. And thank you so much for sharing with everybody. Y'all go check her out. Just Google Susan Cain. You'll find her. And I cannot wait to see these thorough talent submissions that you have coming up on this season of Unbridled.
Jamie, thank you so much. It's been a joy. Absolute joy.
And don't forget, Glenn will be back tomorrow. Glenn will be back on the show. I'm going to let him come back, and you can be sure to listen to all the shows on the Horse Radio Network, horseradionetwork.com. We are on Twitter at Horse Radio. Follow us on Facebook. Just search for Horses in the Morning. And, of course, you can always go to horsesinthemorning.com and listen to that or any of our shows. Everybody, have a great day. Spay, neuter, and geld.